जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। गोपी जन बाला भागी बनगारी, गोपी जन बाला भागी बनगारी। गोपी जन बालवागी बनगारी, यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, 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 जामुनाथ रावण चारी, जमुनाथ रावण चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। Jaya Nitya Lila Pravista Astatara Satasi Siman, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Premzakoho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sibidadhar Shivasi Vishi Gaura Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopinatha Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govaran Ki Jai. Ranta Raj Shimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the Bhaktivedanta Academy. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Apparently not this volume. Here we go. Okay. Loka pi ramam svatanu. Dharanadhyanyamangalam. Yoga dharana yagneya, dadva dama visatsvakam, loka biraman svatanum, dharana dhyana mangalam, yoga dharana yagneya, dagdva dama visatsvakam, Loka Biraman Svatanum. Dharana Dhyana Mangalam. Yoga Dharana Yagneya. Dagdva Dhamma Visatsvakam. Please chant. Loka Biramam Svatanum. Dharanam Jnana Mangalam. Students. If anybody's pregnant and going to have a baby girl, this is a great name, Jnana Mangala. Just throwing it out there. Loka, to all the worlds, Abhiramam, most attractive, Svatanum, his own transcendental body, Dharana, of all trance, Dhyana, and meditation. Mangalam, the auspicious object. Yoga Dharanaya, by mystic trance. Agneya, focused on fire. Andagdva, without burning. Dhamma, the abode. Avisat, he entered. Svakam, his own. Translation. Without employing the mystic Agnei meditation to burn up his transcendental body, which is the all-attractive resting place of all the worlds and the object of all contemplation and meditation, Lord Sri Krishna entered into his own abode. Let's repeat. Without employing the mystic Agnei, I'm sorry, I should have added meditation to that, to burn up his transcendental body, which is the all-attractive resting place of all the worlds, and the object of all contemplation and meditation, Lord Sri Krishna entered into his own abode. Purport by the disciples of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. A yogi empowered to select the moment of leaving his body can cause it to burst into flames by engaging in the yogic meditation called Agnayi, and thus he passes into his next life. The demigods similarly employ this mystic fire when being transferred to the spiritual world. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is completely different from conditioned souls like yogis and demigods. Thus, the Lord's eternal spiritual body is the source of all existence, as indicated here by the words Loka Viranam Svatanum. Lord Krishna's body is the source of pleasure for the entire universe. The word Dharana Dhyana Mangalam indicates that those trying for spiritual elevation through meditation and yoga achieve all auspiciousness through meditation on the Lord's body. Since yogis are liberated simply by thinking of Lord Krishna's body, that body is certainly not material and therefore not subject to burning by mundane mystic fire or any other type of fire. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur reminds us of Lord Krishna's statement in the 11th canto, chapter 14, verse 37, Vani madye smared rupam mamaitad danya mangalam. Without the fire, one should meditate within the fire. Within the fire, one should meditate upon my form, which is the auspicious object of all meditation. Since Lord Krishna's transcendental form is present within fire as the maintaining principle, how can fire affect that form? Thus, although the Lord appeared to enter the mystic yoga trance, the word andagdva indicates that the Lord, since his body is purely spiritual, bypassed the formality of burning and directly entered his own abode in the spiritual sky. This point has also been elaborately explained by Srila Jiva Goswami in his commentary to this verse. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jananjana Shilakaya Chaksuhan Militam Yinatasmai Sri Guru Vinamaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayatiya Girim Yakripatamaham Vande Sri Gurum Dinitarino Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bahevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. There were a couple of points in particular about this verse, about this chapter, this verse also, that actually seem very foreign to us. The first one is that Krishna disappears. As devotees, we count on the fact that Krishna is different from his body, that that's not the situation we have, and that he's not impacted by the demise of the body like we are, and therefore he doesn't have to leave. This is what we count on as devotees. Krishna will always be there. So to have a chapter entitled The Disappearance of Krishna, it's a little bit, wait a minute, I thought Krishna was never, So the second thing is that a mystic yogi can actually decide the time of their death. They're also not governed by the cruel laws of material nature in the same manner that we are, and have that ability to determine when they want to leave this world. So these were two very particular things that stood out to me about this verse. Now the first point within it has a couple of different aspects. One, we know that Krishna's body is made up of three qualities. So this is where the students get to pay attention and give me what are those three qualities of Krishna's body. Just raise your hand and Krishna has three particular qualities that make up his body. You've all said the verse. You all know it. Oh, don't embarrass me. There's one, yes. What's that? Charming. He is very charming, just as your answer is. Sat Chit Ananda. Anybody ever heard that? I think maybe you've heard that, Sat Chit Ananda, that his body is eternal, that his body is blissful, and that his body is full of knowledge. Raise your hand, please, if you have an eternal body. If you get enough joint replacements like me, you're coming close. Raise your hand if your body is filled with bliss. And raise your hand if your body is full of all knowledge. So we didn't see anybody raise our hands because that's not our circumstance. We see that Krishna's body is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, Sat Chit Ananda, but that isn't the circumstance that we have. We also have components that make up our body. Krishna has three components. We have a couple of more. We have five components. Shall I see if any of the students can get that? What are the five components that make up our body? Yes, Gurunga? Yeah, that's one. Fire. Who wants to name another one?
Water.
Water. Now we're on the path. What's that, Mangala?
Air.
No. Yeah.
Ether.
Ether. Got one more.
Land.
Got four out of five. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Yes, those five. So these are the five things that make up our body. Now, of course, in our body, they transform into blood, pus, urine, bone, mucus, things like this, which are described in great philosophical detail. All the nice things that make this body so enjoyable. Who's ever had a really bad cold? Yeah, so many of us. And all this stuff keeps coming out of your nose and coming up from your throat, and it's just a disgusting situation. It's horrible, but that's what our body is like. We don't see anything like that in Krishna's body. So this is the significance of the difference there. Our body is not as enjoyable as that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now this is one of the selling points of the spiritual world. Okay, you're sitting here, you've got this body filled with blood, pus, urine, mucus, bile, it's earth, water, fire, air, ether, it's temporary, it breaks down. But when you go to the spiritual world, Sat Chit Ananda, your body's eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. So that's a selling point. Having the right selling point is very, very good. I'd like one of the students, older or younger, to raise their hand and give me a selling point for Burfi. What's a good selling point for Burfi? Yes?
It's sweet.
It's very sweet. What's another good selling point for Burfi? Come on. Yes? It what? Yes? One more. I want three good selling points for Burfi. Come on. Ganga. It's creamy. So I've got this Burfi here. You can buy it. It's sweet. Yummy, it's creamy, so many good things. Very nice, these are good things here. So this type of selling point is what we need when we want to encourage someone to take up a particular product. So we're encouraging ourselves and everyone else, take up spiritual life, you get a spiritual body. And these are the selling points here, that your body will no longer have all these disgusting things there. So the point we see here is that Krishna is always with us. Krishna will always be with us. And in this section of the Bhagavatam entitled Krishna's Disappearance, it seems to go against that fundamental understanding. But we have to ask ourselves, why is this taking place? So that brings us to a little bit more refined or subtle point and deeper understanding of our Vaishnava philosophy, and that is that we always see that even when the Lord is not directly in front of us, he can be with us by remembering him. This is one of the amazing ways that the Lord can stay with us in all circumstances. We can remember a friend or a family member. Prabhupada gives the wonderful example that when the mother sees the shoe of the child, she immediately thinks of the child. She immediately remembers the child, and all of her affection for the child comes. It's not the same as if the child is right there, but those emotions are brought up. So in the same way, we have a family member or a friend or someone, we see something, we remember them, that emotion is there. With Krishna, that is actually Krishna. That ability to see something and be reminded of Krishna. Because the Lord is non-different from his personal form. The Lord is non-different from his pastimes. The Lord is non-different from his name. Similarly, the Lord is non-different from his remembrance. So in that sense, Krishna really never disappears from the devotee. He may physically not be there right in front of us. How many of you have had an opportunity where during the day you thought of your Ishtadev? Maybe it's Radha Shyam Sundar, maybe it's Krishna Balaram, maybe it's Gornitai, maybe it's someone else, where you weren't in the temple, but you remembered the Lord. Particular circumstance came about and you remembered what the deities looked like that morning or what they looked like the last time you were there. Raise your hand if you've had that experience. Practically everyone. Adult, child, it doesn't matter, because this is one of the fundamental principles of Krishna consciousness, to always remember the Lord. And by that remembrance, the Lord is actually there. Namachintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. The name of Krishna and all of his qualities, they're the same. So when we remember him, he's present there. Therefore, we get shelter by remembering the fact that even though we're not physically in front of the Lord, even though we're not directly there, we still get his presence. We still feel his shelter, and we still feel his protection. This is the benefit of Krishna consciousness. Now, it takes a bit of faith to develop that. That faith comes by many of the processes that we execute in devotional service. Coming regularly to the temple like this and seeing the deity. Prabhupada says, when you see the deity in the morning, the form of the Lord is fixed in your mind, and then you remember that form throughout the day. So this is the opportunity of coming to the temple. Or when we're chanting the holy name of the Lord, we remember the Lord, and that reminds us of the form of the Lord. Or when we think of a particular pastime. So these are the different ways that our faith as a devotee in remembering the Lord becomes strengthened, becomes strong. And then Krishna can and is always with us by that. Because of that mood, and because of that way of thinking, we can accept any type of circumstance we find ourselves in. We can accept any kind of challenge we're put in this world. And we can accept any outcome and just move forward. Because we know that ultimately Krishna will be there. As they say, Krishna's got our back. That's what your best friend is, somebody that's always got your back. Somebody that you know will cover for you and look out for you, encourage you, be there for you like that. So Krishna is that best friend. So this is one of the ways that we are trained by the example of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Always remember Krishna, and yet being separated from him, never feeling separated. This is that mood of Vipralamba Bhav that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has brought. That feeling of separation, but of not being separated. And of course, one of the most classic examples of this we have is the gopis. That in all circumstances, they were always thinking of Krishna and therefore always felt themselves to be with Krishna, even while burning in that fire of separation from Krishna. Krishna would go to the cowherd pastures with the boys and the cows in the morning. They would watch him go, and then the entire day they would be thinking of Krishna. All day, every single thing they did. How many of us, raise your hand if you think of Krishna every moment of every day without cessation? So we're still in the learning process. We're still working towards that. So this example of the gopis is there for us. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us that these are the best examples of how to remember Krishna in all circumstances. Gopi Bhartva Padakamalaya Dasa Dasa Nidasa. To be the servant of these transcendental personalities, always thinking Krishna. So This is the way that Krishna, even though disappearing as his chapter describes, is still there with us, is still there in our heart, in our mind, in our lives, by this process of remembrance, by this process of chanting, by this process of speaking about it. Now in this chapter, a little bit later, we're going to read how it mentions that when the residents of Dwarka, Vasudev, Rohini, Devaki, all of the different residents living in Dwarka that had been there, hear from Dwarka that Krishna, their most lovable object, has departed, they die right on the spot. They just can't bear separation. I mean, if you think about the difficulties you have in your life, oh, you know, so much trouble in this regards, and that's so difficult. I mean, look at these personalities. The closer you are to Krishna, the more your suffering is. You know, Vasudeva and Devaki, you know, Queen Kunti. I mean, the first canto of the Bhagavatam, this prayers of Queen Kunti, this is one of my favorite chapters in the Bhagavatam, is just filled with prayers by Kunti of all the distress and difficulty she's experiencing, which is an impetus for her to remember Krishna. But here, Vasudev, Rohini, Devaki, they've gone through so much difficulty, these residents in Dwarka, that the minute they hear Krishna's died, they all, that's it. Fire consumes their body, they're gone. And then the wives of the Yadavas that had been all killed in this battle, this self-inflicted battle, the wives of the Yadavas, they all took on to the funeral pyres themselves. So everyone gave up their lives when they could no longer be with Krishna. Of course, that's not the point that we're at, and that's not the suggestion of this chapter in any means. But it does show us what the intensity of love for Krishna can be, how it can manifest. Now, I was thinking a little bit about Dwarka. Now, later in this chapter, we hear a little bit more about his service. What a grave responsibility to be witnessing, this was just in the last chapter we heard about this, to witness the departure of the Lord. But before the Lord goes to say, okay, I want you to be the one to take this message of my departure and give it to everyone else. There was no one else there when Krishna left the planet. Dwarka was there. And Krishna, he manifested, the chariot was there, all the weapons were there, they all rose from the earthly realm and returned to the spiritual sky, as did the Lord himself. In this way, he gave that responsibility to Dwarka. What an intimate associate Dwarka must be. But I did an expansive amount of research through just an unbelievable amount of different books and things, and the Puranic Encyclopedia and so many different things. There is practically no information available about the life of Dwarka. Now, Prabhupada does mention Dwarka 33 times in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna book, Nectar Devotion, throughout his writings. He speaks about him. He gives some information on him, but there's no biographical information. But we can understand how intimate Dwarka was with the Lord. This is his chariot driver. If you're sitting in a car with someone going some distance, there's going to be a conversation. And if you're a close associate of that person, there's quite likely to be some very intimate and personal conversation. Dwarka drove the Lord's chariot into so many battles. Dwarka drove the Lord's chariot into the different forest fire. He drove the Lord's chariot into battle against Salvan, Jarasandha, all these personalities. But nothing he had done prior to this prepared him for the service that Krishna was about to give him. You go and tell all my relatives that I've left this world, that I'm no longer here within this material realm. So what an amazing responsibility that is. So this is the contradiction that the title of this chapter gives us, Krishna's departure, but by remembering, there is no departure. Now, the other point that I was thinking about in regards to this was the difference between a yogi who is able to give up their life at will, entering into the fire, and someone like ourselves, who we have absolutely no control over when we depart from this body. We don't have any say-so in the matter at all. There's only a handful of students left, so we'll broaden this out. Who can name one personality, very famous personality, for instance, that had control over when they were going to die? Runga? Bhishma did, yeah. Another one, Badahari? No? Anyone, someone else? Someone very close to Bhishma. Bhishma's mother, Ganga. If you think about it, she controlled when she left this world. On conditions she placed upon her husband. Never question me, I'll stay forever. The first time you question me, I'm gone. Such a wonderful platform for an ideal marriage. You don't question anything I do, I'll stick around. The minute you ask any questions, I'm out of here. I don't think it works that way in reality. But yes, Ganga. She, all right, I've done my service to these babies that I was brought here to take. Boom, I'm going back. Left, went back to the heavenly planet. So these are personalities that control when they leave. But we don't have that ability. We're tossed and thrown about by the cruel hand of fate, by the compromising details of our karma, by the frustrated attempts of this feeble body. These are all very miserable conditions we find ourselves in that control when we leave. These great yogis, they have the ability to decide, okay, now I'm leaving. They can prolong their life very long. One famous story. There were three yogis living in a cave in the Himalayas. They'd taken a vow not to speak. So one day the three of them were sitting there and there was a sound outside the cave. One of the yogis spoke up and said, oh, it's a goat. So a year went by. The second yogi spoke up and said, no, it's a cow. Another year went by. The third yogi spoke up and said, if you don't quit arguing, I'm leaving. So the yogis have this ability to lengthen or terminate their life by choice because of their mystic abilities. Their determination of what is an auspicious time to leave, what's not an auspicious time to leave. You know, how is this done? Well, there's a very nice mention here. Dhyana Yoga Dharana, by mystic trance of remembrance. So by the mystic trance of remembrance, they're able to ignite that fire, that internal fire that then takes over the body. But what are they remembering? Mangala, that most auspicious thing. So what is that most auspicious thing? Well, of course, that most auspicious thing is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So these words, Dharana Dhyana Mangalam, this indicates that for those who are trying to make spiritual advancement, who are trying to elevate themselves spiritually through meditation and yoga, they achieve this by meditation on the body of the Lord. The process of yoga, of course, is very, very popular nowadays, and much more so than it was in the earlier years of yoga's influence, of its presence in this country at any rate. It's become much more of a meditative process. You see people that are teaching yoga, you see people that are pursuing yoga, understanding that there should be some higher goal, not just some bodily exercise, as Srila Prabhupada describes. Though this process is mentioned by in the purport here, that by meditation through their yoga, by remembrance through their meditation, the auspicious form of the Lord allows these personalities to then make advancement, to advance up the yoga ladder. This is what's meant by advancing up the yoga ladder. That as one becomes perfect in the practice, it doesn't mean that the better and better I am, then I can stand on just one hand. That may be there, but the real perfection of yoga is that by achieving this perfection, I'll understand the Lord's presence. I'll remember the Lord's presence. So, does this mean, as the verse indicates here, that the Lord also burns his own body when he leaves? Well, the purport gives us a very nice explanation on this by both Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami. I would have been happy to have been able to read their commentaries, but I don't have those books. But they help us to understand how this is not how the Lord leaves. The yogi leaves by burning up the material body. The Lord's body is not material, so there's no need for it being burnt up. It simply returns to the spiritual world. Now, I was thinking that even in itself is a bit of a dichotomy. The Lord never leaves the spiritual world. So does there anybody even know he's gone? And when he returns, is it like, oh, you're back, you know? It's like when Buttahari's traveling for months and months at a time, then he comes back. We're all so happy to see him back, you know? Oh, Buttahari's back. Yeah. I mean, imagine if Buttahari came back, nobody even paid any attention to him. Yeah, only in Alachua, he says. So, you know, I mean, it's not really clearly explained here, but we do understand because the Lord's non-different from his body, he doesn't have to burn up his body in this way. And in this way, he actually returns in his self-same form, just continues on with his spiritual roadshow, as Prabhupada would describe it, going from one place to another, enacting his pastimes. Now, in the verse, there was something that, as I was just reading it, that I hadn't put in my notes that I got to thinking about. In the purport here. It's discussing the type of fire. A yogi empowered to select the moment of leaving his body can cause it to burst into flames by engaging in the yogic meditation called Agnei, and thus he passes into the next life. So this is a particular type of fire that the yogi is able to enact. Fire has many different identities. For those of us that are accustomed to performing Agnihotras, homas, each particular function, each particular samskara, each particular ceremony that's associated with the fire, a different personality is invited to be present in that fire. There's different names for those personalities that you invoke if you're performing if you're performing a Vivaha ceremony, you invoke the Lord of Vishnu Agni as Samudbhava. If you're doing something for auspiciousness to invoke the names of the Lord, you invoke Mangala. So there's 12 different names of the Lord according to these samskaras, according of the forms of Agni that are invited to be present in the fire. So in the same way, the yogis themselves, they have this ability to invoke a certain form of Agni to take up the process of devouring their body. And thus, when the body is devoured, it's a purifying process because this form of Agni is purifying the physical elements. So this is another way that the yogi has achieved a level of perfection that can be executed to a smaller degree when there's some type of Agnihotra, where the different forms of Agni are invited. But on a much more broad scale and a much more empowering scale. Plus, I mean, these are personalities that are invoking simply by their meditation and mantra the fire to ignite itself. I have one god brother, he's a well-known Purohit, who has a little trade secret, so to speak, of palming a little bit of substance and doing the mudras and dropping it, and then the fire ignites. So, you know, that's one way it can be done, you know. In previous times, by simply uttering the correct mantra, the Brahman would ignite the fire. There's always a personality at every type of Agnihotra, every type of samskara, called the Brahma. And this is the referee, if you will. And that referee sits at the fireside and he notes, the pots are in the wrong spot. I heard you chant that mantra incorrectly. Or, yes, everything is good. Almost everything is auspicious. This is the Brahma's position, to note what needs to be properly executed and point out when it's not, so that the proper result will be there. Of course, in this day and age, none of us are qualified to execute those in that type of a circumstance. But he would be able to determine you've invoked the wrong form of Vishnu Agni here. You have to redo this, you know. So they would be able to tell by the potency of the Brahman igniting the fire, his level of advancement by whether he could actually ignite that fire just by the uttering of mantra, or whether he had to get a $2.99 lighter from the store with the big extension and pull the thing so the little butane flame will come out and light the wood and like that. So we can determine the level of advancement by which method of igniting the fire we're seeing. But these are the different ways that Agni is present. And in this verse, they're describing this form of Agni known as Agneyi, the internal fire that consumes the body at the time of dissolution of the yogi leaving this world. So this is just, you know, some of the points as we enter into this chapter. We're only on the sixth verse. As we get further into it, another 10 verses or so, we start to hear about the distress and the response of the residents of Dwarka as the information comes to them about Krishna's departure. So we'll finish there with my feeble attempt at Srimad Bhagavatam. If there's any questions, comments, corrections, oh my goodness. Sesha, Radhadamodar, and Bharahari.
Thank you, Prabhu. Yesterday on Facebook, I saw live from Kumbh Mela a yogi laying on a fire, a burning fire. Now, was that an example of a different type of a fire that doesn't burn you and therefore you can lay on it? Or do you have any idea?
I'm not sure I clearly understood that question. I'm sorry.
You said there are different kinds of fire.
Lying on fire, not being burned. There are different types of yogic advancement, yogic skills, by which one can tolerate pain. Now, for really super advanced yogis, the body's not even damaged. You know, I mean, we read in the Bhagavatam different yogis that have the ability to rejuvenate their body. What was that? Was it Kasyapa or Kadama? Kadama Muni, that when he had to, make himself more attractive, you know, rejuvenated the body and was a young, handsome sage and to go forward, you know, instead of an old, you know. So, I mean, there's stories like that in the Bhagavatam as to whether there are personalities living in our current age that can do those things. It's doubtful, but not impossible. I mean, there are many things that go on in the higher regions of the Himalayas that are really quite beyond what we know. And it... What's that? Yeah, yeah. And, but you know, I mean, in the modern age, these things aren't so common, especially at this time of, I don't want to say history, but when there's the Kumbh Mela, this astrological time, a lot of people come out of the higher regions that are just a little beyond our ability to comprehend. Kumbh Mela draws all these personalities out that can do things that are just like off the charts, you know? I mean, even one can witness things like that, you know? So whether it's actually happening or I wasn't there, I can't say, but is it possible to happen? Yeah, it's possible. How likely? I don't know. But it's not beyond spiritual understanding that these things can happen. That's a pretty good quasi answer. I think Radhadamodar was next.
In the Krishna book story, Daksa offends Lord Shiva. Sati sat down in front of everyone and gave up her body in mystic flames.
Mm. Yeah. Now there's another example. Yeah. Yeah. Bharahari was next, and then Trivikram. Oh, he was going to give the same example. Okay. Yeah, go ahead and give it to Trivikram.
When one practices yoga, gradually he develops different mystical powers. I mean, even though meditation is not prevalent in this age, there are still yogis, especially the Shivites, that practice so much different kind of yogas, and they do develop some degree of mystical powers, because that's part of the achievement, you know, developing mystical powers. So if he could lie down on fire, and I've seen some of them done other things.
That is
very,
true.
Very strange, you know?
That is true that there are, like I say, there are personalities that can do these things, but it's certainly not the norm. Other side of the room? Yes, Matthew? Microphone's coming.
We have an example of Lord Jesus Christ that he acquired all these cities. Of course, the higher purpose is like to enhance faith to people. He performed the miracles, you know, and he was able to walk on the water or do other things. He spent time in the Himalayas, the Puranas, of course, probably the Puranas, so many scriptures. They testify in all these events, you know, that, I mean,
yeah, there are many.
It was a mystic yogi, that's what I'm saying. It was,
yeah, there are many examples
of that. But he have that, you know, ability.
From our philosophical understanding, the activities he performed would lend us to understand that he had mystic cities, yeah. I don't know if down the street at the Baptist church they go along with that too much, but... I'm sorry?
You know those yogis with
Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Mm-hmm. Bhaktivinoda
Thakur, yeah. Vibhikshan and all those, they had cities.
Yeah. Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur shut himself up for 4 years. We were just there, Badahari and I, just a few months ago at his home. It's just a little, tiny little room, and he shut himself up in there for 4 years. So, yeah, that's Mystic City. I mean, I've been in the house for 3 weeks, and I'm going nuts already, you know, so.
No, I mean, like, those other yogis that he had to take care of.
In his past, yeah.
Vibhikshan and others.
Yeah. That particular example, though, is the yogi using his powers for, you know, devious means, and so Bhaktivinoda had to correct that, you know. So it was used by many people to point out the strength of a Vaishnava over the mystic yogi, and which is one of the reasons why his devotees, Prabhupada, discourages. There's no need for pursuing developing these mystic powers, you know, if they're supposed to be there, they'll come on their own accord, but in our line, this isn't something we strive to do.
I was just reading the Bhagavatam to one of them, and by that he was able to counteract his powers.
Yeah. That's how powerful the Bhagavatam is, simply by that sound vibration. Yeah. So we'll Madan Mohan, one more and then we'll finish there.
Yesterday it was mentioned about Haridas Thakur when he was to be offered the first prasadam.
From the Shuddha ceremony.
And the way it was explained yesterday is that they asked all the Brahmins that were disgruntled with that to light the fire. And they, a couple of them tried, but nobody did it. And then they asked
Har.
And he said he was actually quite embarrassed by the whole thing, but as soon as he said it, whatever mantras they were, or he even thought of it, the fire just burst into flames. So that was...
Well, you know, Haridas Thakur is also another example of different types of mystic powers. I mean, despite being beaten in the marketplaces so many times, there were no marks on his body because Mahaprabhu took those. And when he wasn't dying, I mean, a normal man would have died long before. And when the servants of the Mohammedan ruler were distressed, said, "Oh, you want me to die?" Just went into a trance, fell in the river. Okay. So, yeah, devotees, if it's necessary, Krishna will give those abilities.
And the other mystic power he did was when the prostitute came.
Yeah.
He's not to be imitated. But
That's a mystic power for sure. I will finish there. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Like different.